writing session today?
Okay. It is April 9th at 1 o'clock. This is the UCF BOT team and the UCF UFF, United Faculty of Florida team. We are bargaining over Article 23 salaries. This is our first session of the 2019-2020 year for this this round of negotiations.
And, 2021.
Huh?
Is it not 2021?
Well, right now it's 2020. This is our first meeting of 2020. I meant we are, this is the actual year that we are bargaining for, yes, for the salary article for 2020 to 2021. Yes.
Okay. All right. So, So I don't know if you, I mean, I could start, but I just wondered if you had an agenda or if there are things you wanted to talk about today, Sherry?
No. Nope.
Specifically?
I have nothing specific to talk about today.
Okay. And I know there's not the financial people, but we could talk about a few things sure. That you could relay back the messages back to everyone else. So one of my first questions was regarding... What is it? Sherry?
She may have dropped.
Can you hear me?
Dropped off, yes. We can hear you.
You can?
Yes.
Okay, because I lost you guys for a minute there.
We're doing our best.
I know.
Okay. So one of the things is regarding the latest legislation, and they passed a budget. And I think they're talking about distribution, but then of course with COVID, there's also been the CARES Act, which is supposed to give every school with Pell Grants that receives federal Pell Grants some sort of money to offset losses. So I was wondering if you guys were at that stage right now of knowing what the budget may or may not be.
We have
for the upcoming 2020.
We have no idea.
Okay.
We have absolutely no idea, because that federal money, at least 50% of it has to go directly to students. We can't use any of it. The other part of it, we don't know what kind of strings it may or may not have attached to it. We don't have all of the details yet, and we have no idea what the state's going to do. We are hearing ominous rumblings about perhaps a special session, other issues but we are expecting that, and I don't think it takes a genius to just look at what's going on in the state's economy to think that they are probably going to have to amend that. But whatever they already passed is going to be amended in some form or another.
Okay. So is the CFO starting to look into that, like how to
well, everybody,
consider all these big losses?
Everybody's looking at everything. And, of course, we've got contingency plans for or starting to work on contingency plans for, you know, good cases, bad cases, worst cases. You know, nobody is, it's just, I'm not saying anything that's unique to UCF or unique to Florida, even particularly, you know, the whole economy is in a mess. And I don't think anybody has any clue how fast it's going to get back up and running.
As far as, back up and running, we'll see. But there are, I just know from like looking at what other universities are doing, including our own in the state university system in Florida.
Sure.
So it was actually responsible to have hiring freezes, which I noticed that UCF also did.
Yes, but I have done that.
See also, and this is just, a lot of this is anecdotal evidence, but just the fact that some of the hiring freezes, there was a considerable amount of exceptions to it. So I was wondering if there was a logic as to why there were so many exceptions.
I don't know, because I'm not involved in those day-to-day decisions on what gets accepted. I know that there are you talking about statewide, or are you talking about UCF in particular?
UCF. Like all the other state university systems had hiring freezes. Without exceptions. And then I saw that at UCF, and like I said, at UCF, people are telling me that there's hire, and I also saw the email. There was an email that there was a hiring freeze with exceptions.
Well, it's not that exceptions have already been granted. It is that there are, you can apply for an exception. And I'll give you an example. There's one department at UCF, and I won't name it because it's probably not fair to do that, though. But they are down 8 faculty members right now. And when that out of their, due to retirements and resignations, just a variety of reasons, and they have lost a third of their teaching capacity. So they are in dire straits. They had permission to hire an instructor who would cover 4 classes year-round, you know, 3, 4, 4, and 4, and had extended a soft offer to that person on April 1st. And when the hiring freeze announcement came out, they were told, sorry, you can't bring that person on. So now they are applying for an exception, thinking, you know, God, we're drowning here. We can't mm-hmm. teach the classes we have. They have heard nothing back. I don't know if they'll get that exception. But there are cases where people are feeling like, you know, I don't know how we're going to just cover everything if we can't get at least hire an instructor to help us out here. But as far as I know, none have been granted. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't be, but, you know, and I would guess that most other universities are doing something similar, mm-hmm. allowing people to at least apply and make their case that, you know.
Okay. We had a question about top hires, because I know the top hires were still going through. Is there, mm-hmm. where does the funding come for those? Is that foundation money or come from the outside?
Well, there's a state statute. There's a state statute that allows us to pay up to a certain amount for executive hires, like the president, obviously, mm-hmm. but over and above that amount, which it's somewhere in the $200,000, $220,000, somewhere in that range. Over and above that, it has to come from external sources, foundation, just generally foundation funds that cover something like that. But, I mean, obviously we have to have a president. But I don't think there's any hiring going on other than that. Now, at some point, we will have to have a permanent provost. We will have to have a permanent CFO. But, you know, at the moment, we're just kind of limping along with what we've got. And, of course, we won't know a lot of this. It's not just the budget issues, but we got a brand new president coming in. We have no idea what his agenda is going to be.
Mm.
Except to try to keep us afloat, probably.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think, not having a permanent CFO, not having all these things that you just mentioned is what's causing a lot of the anxiety, but also might make us weak with the state, who I know state makes the budgets, and I know the state also mandates a lot of things of UCF. So that's why I wanted to have this meeting also to talk about the clarification of some of these things, and also to see if there was a contingency plan, and then also verbalize some of the things that other faculty have been telling me, and then also, you know, just keeping up with the news, finding out what other, and I'm not talking about, like, you know, Stanford or fancy schools. I'm talking about, like, what is going on between Florida. What is Florida schools doing? Because I know, like, FIU had a plan, FSU had a plan, so did UF. And, of course, I know they have the advantage because they have a president, a provost, and a CFO that work together immediately. So we're at a disadvantage there. And I also wanted to ask regarding the new president. I know he comes on April 13. Is there any, aside from, you just said he's going to keep us afloat, but aside from that, does he have any vision or plan as to what we're going to do?
I'm not, that's kind of above my pay grade. I'm not privy to what the new president's plans are. I assume when he gets here, I know he's scheduling meetings. He's been meeting with the VPs, and I assume he'll start meeting with some of the, I know he's got a meeting scheduled with the deans, and I know he'll start meeting with other groups of leadership teams. The provost core team probably at some point, which I'm on, we'll get a meeting with him. I would say I'm about 3 or 4 steps down in that leadership team, but he will start filtering down into those lower levels of leadership teams. And I know as he meets with people like the provost, he'll let us know what the new president's agenda is.
Okay, because I was wondering, because I know this has been proposed at other state universities, given the budget downfall, if it does become quite severe, this legislation comes back, other schools have talked about actually top administrators, such as the president or the provost, taking pay cuts anywhere from like 5 to 20%, depending on how much they're actually receiving. I don't know if there's been any discussion or of that.
I do not know officially what discussions have been taking place. I, like you, I have some anecdotal evidence is too strong a word. Some anecdotal information, shall we say, that yes, that there are discussions about all of those types of things. I mean, I know that there are contingency plans that have been drawn up, but I think nobody is going to be publicizing any of those until the new president gets here, certainly. And I know that there have been discussions about, you know, upper level people taking pay cuts. You know, there are a whole gamut of things that have been discussed, but.
And I'm assuming also like reducing the number of students, reducing the size of the campus. I mean, are all of those things under discussion? Or just, I know, anecdotal. Just throwing it out there.
I think I'm sure they are. I think that there's also discussion about not just voluntarily reducing the number of students, but I think there's some real concern everywhere, not just here, but that students may choose not to come back for a variety of reasons. That, you know, some people may just decide that they don't want to do online instruction on and on completely, if that's what we end up having to do. But I think there's a real fear that universities across the state could take a real hit in enrollment because people just won't be able to afford to come back.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I mean, we've been working for, I'm sure you're aware, for at least a year, maybe a little bit longer, we had been working on a long-term enrollment plan to sort of to modify our enrollment strategy at some point to, you know, move from the totally, we're just going to grow into the biggest university ever. Plan to a more streamlined process, but I'm sure that continues, but I think this is going to create a new urgency to do something because honestly, I don't think anybody knows how many people we're going to have in the fall.
So I had a question also regarding, and this is of course related to the crisis, is of course you can imagine some people are concerned about their own jobs, and I don't know if there's some fear of programs closing. I don't think you could be able to discuss that, but I just like, I don't know if at
I'm
some
sure,
point
I
we
am,
get a
I am is certain it, that that's a fear.
Yes. I don't know if at some point in the future we can assure people that programs won't be closing, or will the university announce if that is a plan in the future?
Well, if we're going to close programs, at some point we have to announce it. But yeah. I don't know. I know nothing about that at this point. And okay. I think that would be a last resort.
Okay, so last resort. So that's good.
That's just my opinion, but... Okay. But I'm assuming that whatever would impact students the most, that would harm students, would be the last resort for any university.
Mm-hmm. And I'm asking because I remember when they merged the two schools. I know Whitaker had at the time, he had a meeting with everybody. He announced a surprise meeting with the COPA and all the other schools when they were going to merge. But I think it was something like 80% of the people heard about it on Orlando Sentinel before Whittaker even met with people. So,
Well,
so that's what I'm saying. Like, if there could be, like, just, and it's part of also the impact bargaining. I think that was one of it. Like, if there is going to be like a severe change of some sort, if we could have plenty of notice and not just like read it in the paper.
I'll convey that concern.
Okay. Yeah. And then I just know, well, this is only talking to medical college people. They said when they closed it, when they created it and they closed some programs and moved some people, I remember some of them telling me that they had before, when they closed their program, before, they didn't say like just, oh, we're going to fire you. They had actually seen if some of the people could fit into existing departments. So I was wondering, and again, I'm just conveying messages, you know, I'm the messenger.
Sure.
If that could happen again. So instead of rather than if you close a program, rather than firing people or saying now you're out of work, trying to move people into other departments or merge them in other places rather than just get rid of them. So I'm just saying some of the things that
I understand
of what's going to happen. As you can imagine, you know, it's not just probably faculty that are afraid of this. It's
no, it's not
all administrators, everybody. And this is again a conveying another message is some of the other schools were already talking about. They had retirement plans, and I'm not aware if UCF had one, which is. So before COVID had happened, they had already been thinking about retirement things. So like early retirement for people. So something similar that we just had where at the last, you know, this past bargaining section, what do we call it? The T2RP or something. Yeah. So something similar to that, like we just implemented that, whereas other schools had it for a while. So I'm wondering if there's going to be like, so for instance, if we do need to reduce the size of faculty, if there's going to be incentives for early retirement for anyone, or if that's ever been discussed, aside from what we discussed last year on T2RP.
When did you first come to UCF?
2010.
Okay. So was it 2008 or 2009 that we did layoffs? It was before you got here, but it was right around then.
2009 is when the departments were and programs were selected for.
Because I remember at the time doing some research on that same topic about, you know, buyouts and early retirement and so forth. So I know that that is something that is has been in the past discussed. I would not be surprised if it were discussed again. But I, you know, nobody has talked to me about it at this point.
Okay. All right. So those were my primary questions. Let me see. So I know some of my team members are here. Did you, any of you have any questions in particular that I didn't cover regarding the financial COVID situation?
God,
I don't have any question at this time.
Don't we all wish we knew?
No, I know.
What's happening?
Most of the stuff that I'm just presenting is stuff that I know other state universities are doing, other discussions at other universities.
Mm-hmm.
And above all else is, and I know we're doing impact bargaining, and so, you know, continuing these discussions and stuff and trying to be as transparent as possible, because there is a lot of panic right now as to what's going to happen. And then, of course, people not being able to go out and stuff, as you can imagine, yourselves included, are probably thinking a lot of things right now while you're at home and you have nothing else to do except think about them or stare at your screen. So you have two choices, worry or stare at a screen.
Yeah, I think we're all experiencing a little bit of that.
Yeah. Okay. So if you don't have any other comments or anything, I wanted to move into Article 23, if that's all right with all of you.
Sure, that's fine. Just one quick question. Are y'all still planning to have your ratification vote by mail and have the results in by the 20th?
Well, that's what I was going to ask, actually. I don't know who know this question. So we're supposed to be on stay-at-home orders. Is it useful for us? Because the thing is, we have to actually go to the post office, and we invite as many people as possible to go to the post office to watch us actually count. It's supposed to be, I mean, we could videotape it and tell people to stay home, but it's not, I guess I asked Marshall, who's our executive director. He said, it's not technically legal, but I guess there's nothing in the law that says we can't do that. So I wanted to ask your opinion, because is the bot, how are they going to meet and ratify? By Zoom?
By Zoom.
Okay. Since ours is meant, we have like five, I think, oh yeah, we have close to 500 members, and we invite all of them to come. Not that they all show up, but I was just wondering.
Hi, this is Scott. May I interrupt?
Yes, go ahead.
So Giovanna hasn't been apprised of the latest. I'm sorry, so if I may. With the elections committee and everything, yeah, we're talking about it, and we will update you as soon as we've made a final decision. But I can tell you, we are leaning toward seeing ratification as essential. And I'll be quite frank, because I believe the leave article and the changes there are something, that we want to have in place as soon as possible. So we're leaning toward that and looking at best practices and video options for making it a public viewing and counting. So we're seeing if we can, anyway, that's our next discussion, and we will be happy to update you just as soon as we know something.
Okay, thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, so that's that.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, my notes spread out. Okay, all right. So Article 23, and like I said, I guess the chief financial officer will come join us on April 30th?
Yes. Well, it won't be the CFO, because actually the CFO probably doesn't know as much in detail as it'll be two people. Christy, what's her last name? I can't remember.
Harris.
Harris, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Rebecca from the provost. Christy Harris is our budget officer. And Rebecca is from the she's a budget officer for the provost office. So the two of them will be coming. And as I said, honestly, since we do have this interim CFO, they probably know more in terms of really the details of how things operate at UCF and in the state than the CFO does at this point. So,
okay. All right. So then I'll talk more about, like, for instance, promotion increases and actual salary on that date.
Sure, that'd be great.
Yeah, so I had a few questions. So I'm actually going to meet with Jana, I think, next Thursday. Yeah, our team is meeting with her to talk about excellence in research awards, or not excellence in research, excellence awards, and tips and RIAs and all that.
Right.
And just to get a little bit more clarification, because I know in the past that was something that was just holding us up. And I wouldn't want that to happen again. So I'll cover some of that with her. But for 23.5 on excellence awards, I did want to bring up to you that we are interested, since we removed two excellence awards, we're interested in bringing in two excellence awards to reflect our university. Like, for instance, include like a team research award. And it was actually Jana's office, the faculty excellence office, that reminded us that many of us do research not as single people, which is what the current excellence in research one does. It awards for individuals, but we wanted to add like a team award, like people who work together in order to create like a bigger project. And it was actually Jana's office who reminded UFF and all our faculty, like with the seed money for team awards, there was like at least two types for different types of teams, but that's very important. And I know like Florida Gulf State University now has a team research award, and we would want that for the college level and the university level.
Yeah, I can, that's an interesting thought, especially since we've put so much money and time into the cluster groups, which are essentially team research groups. So I can see, and Jana is a member of one of those, or I think heads one of those clusters. So I can see why that thought occurred to her. Okay.
Yeah. So having that one for the college and university level, like we do with some of the others. And at the university level, we wanted to consider, our team has been talking about the Excellence in Research Award. It's already at the college level, but then at the university level, there's one. But one thing I've noticed, and I went back on all the last 20 years of who's received the research, Excellence in Research, ever since they broke up the colleges, and it's always somebody in like the hard sciences, I guess, or laser energy. So at the university level, we're proposing to have like three categories of research. So for instance, and Nina, Nina's idea. So having the regular, like the sciences, that type of thing, but also creative research, and then perhaps a third category for social science and humanities.
Okay, well, something to talk about, certainly.
Yeah. So, I mean, I realize right now you're just listening, taking notes, but like in order to be more fair, because I mean, a lot of people, mm-hmm. like, especially like at the creative level, I mean, they're getting like major awards. The musicians are becoming internationally renowned. I just know, you know, this is my friend, so I just know who she is. Like Wanda Ramuda Ortiz, for instance, like she's traveling all over the world. She's getting all sorts of people are buying her art, you know, an artist right. who could live on their art. So, and she's never once won the Excellence in Research Award because of the way it's set up right now. So let me see. So that was another one. The other one too for Excellence in Research, and I think I know the answer to this. So we were thinking about increasing the amount because it hasn't increased in many years. I think it's, somebody told me, a little bird told me that it's been $2,000 for the last 20 years, the Excellence Awards. So we're thinking of increasing the amount. But if that were not possible, oh, is it your lawnmower guy?
Oh, yeah, sorry. You want me to mute?
No, it's okay. I just was making sure that you could hear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm fine.
So we're thinking of requesting to increase the amount to $3,000, but willing to negotiate that with also okay. considering, and I don't know what the university considers, like, for instance, if they included parking. So for instance, you win this award and you get like, I don't know what we call it at UCF, like primo parking, like reserved parking. So something maybe not like we do for like the pregnancy ladies, but like where we get a sign like this is, you know, parking reserved for this Excellence in Research Award person.
Okay. Sure, like you see that sometimes when in store parking lots, employee of the month. Reserved
yes.
for employee of the month or something.
Yes. Employee of the month. And parking is a very important issue at UCF. So faculty
yeah,
always think
tell
of
me about it.
Yeah. So
I spend a bloody fortune on my park, my reserve spot.
Yeah. So that is also the SUS system. They've actually done that in several other schools where they've given reserve parking and people almost like love it more than the money sometimes.
I can understand that. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, considering like other things outside of that, you know, like, so reserve parking, I'm trying to think of other things that are possible, you know, for our faculty. Okay. Does anyone, Nina or anybody, have any comments?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. So that's 23.5 with Excellence Awards. I wanted to ask two questions. So I'm going to start from the end here. So 23.11 is administrative salary stipends.
Mm-hmm.
Which are somewhat, I wouldn't say confusing, but it's somewhat like it's not particularly clear Well, first of all, the acronym is terrible, so I don't know if there's an alternate to the acronym, ASS. So, but the other one is like,
yeah, you just never thought about that.
Yeah. What exactly does it mean? And I know last year, I think when my predecessor Fath was dealing with this one, he had like a plan to make it very, to kind of try to define what it is. But his was very, very detailed. And I understand why you wouldn't want that much detail, because you want some flexibility. But is it possible to have more clarification on what it is? Because a lot of people don't quite understand what it is. So sometimes, like, this is what I get for questions from faculty. So actual examples is they're now coordinating a program, and within the same department, and one coordinator gets course release, another coordinator gets course release and money over the summer, another one just gets a stipend. And so it's very, I don't know if there's any way to clarify that. Like, if your title is the same, coordinator, but then even within the same department or even the same college, the compensation for doing this extra work is always very different. Is there any way to streamline that?
We can certainly try. I mean, I don't think we want to get to this place where we're doing something uniform, because you need to have some flexibility with that. Because even within the same, you know, college, wow, that's loud.
So I was going to jump in here and say that it helps if you want to know why there's different people at different levels. It helps if I know exactly what you're talking about, and I can probably answer exactly. But I know in your college specifically, Jeff Moore has been really adamant about trying to level and make everything as fair and as transparent as possible. So I feel pretty confident that within your college that the stipends are what I would think of as leveled, depending on the amount of work. Just because you had the same title doesn't mean that it's the same amount of duties.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you might be a coordinator over a very tiny program with, you know, that had responsibilities for a couple of weeks in a semester with just a handful of people. Or you might be a coordinator of a big program that took up a lot of time and extended almost the entire semester. It may be the problem that we're giving we're giving the same title to very different functions. And that may be part of the problem. I mean, but we can certainly take a look at that.
Juana, is it a question of they don't know what a stipend is, or is it really that they feel that they aren't necessarily being given fairly to different faculty?
They feel it's not giving fairly to different faculty. And I can give you a couple examples, but I don't know if I should.
Later.
Let's do that later.
We can talk about specific, and I can get specific answers for you about why they are leveled the way they are. A specific question. Anyone always has the ability to ask about that. There's nothing prohibiting someone from asking about that. So your initial question said like you didn't understand what the stipend was for. And so I wanted to make sure that we had the question right. The question is, sometimes people feel like they are earning less for the same amount of work. I understand that problem, but I could help maybe explain what's happening behind the scenes if they're afraid to talk to their supervisor about it.
I just want to say that there has been example where, you know, two programs within a department, you would have two coordinators doing the same job, but just because one program had more people, that was considered give that program more a stipend and the other program not a stipend, but it was exactly the same job that both of them were doing. Just one had more people to deal with, which didn't change the job exactly. Also,
it changed the number of hours needed to perform the job.
It's right? The same amount of hours, you know? And also, like, there has been cases, I'm not going to name names, where, you know, that was brought to the attention of a particular chair. And the response was, oh, you know, you like to play the role of victim. So it's not always easy. It's not always black and white. And a lot of time it's not fair, you know, because it feels like it's at the discretion of maybe the chair. I don't know exactly where this is coming from, but it's not black and white. It's really hard. And I really wish that we would have a chance to look at everybody the same way. You're doing the job, you're spending the amount of hour, this is what you get. So I'm just voicing that opinion because I know, you know, of, you know, on the other side what's happening.
You're talking within your department?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't want to point that one out, but yes, Marie. Yeah, the Modern Languages Department, they've actually, on separate occasions, so actually Marie had not told me, it was actually other people from her department had told me that. But also within the College of Arts and Humanities. But just being able to better define what it is, because there is a lot of question about it, you know, about like, why do I have the same title? I'm doing the same amount of hours, but why is this person getting $2,500 stipend and I'm not getting anything? Or alternatively, somebody gets course release, but they don't get course release. And so they just think it's unfair and they get very upset about it. And then in the case, I heard that story as well with that Marie had told me that somebody had actually gone to the chair and the chair's like, had actually said something like that. And in that wasn't the only story. There was another story similar to that where it was actually a woman who was doing what she thought was a lot of free work. She went to her chair and he just said, oh, you're just, and she was in art history. So he said, oh, this is art hysteria. You know, so that was very, he's gone now though. That wasn't SVAD. That was the previous guy. So I think you know who he is.
I'm not targeting any particular chair at the moment, if I
can. Yeah, but I was talking about the one that I knew about from SVAD, because he's gone now. He was actually
That was years and years ago.
That was years ago. Yeah, but it was like maybe 5 years ago, and I remember her telling me that, and I remember mentioning it to Scott, and I thought that was just terrible.
Well, it's certainly a little bit of a difficult circumstance, as I recall, too.
Well, it's certainly something we can look into and talk about and can see if we can provide some more clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be wonderful because that would help a lot of our faculty too, not thinking, you know, and always that feeling, especially now, like it's the 21st century and a lot of people feeling like, oh, I do a lot of work and I don't get the same compensation as, you know, person B over there who's doing the same amount of work as me. So just trying to even things out, I mean, making it a more, you know, what do you call equal society?
Equitable
society. And I also mentioned too, it was FIU who just sent me some of their like latest language. They're about to bargain it. And they talked about equitable. So also within Article 23, like this is another comment, of course, if you guys would be interested in adding some of that language regarding like having equitable, like being in 23.11 administrative salary stipends, having that language of trying to make things as equitable as possible. And again, you don't have to answer. I'm just making suggestions.
We're happy to look at whatever you want to, if you want to let me see, look at the FIU language, I'm happy to look at it.
Okay. All right. So I'll probably before the April 30th session, do you think you'll be having any proposed language for us?
No, I probably not because, unless you're talking about for stipends or anything at all.
Oh, for anything at all in Article 23.
I don't know. I mean, at this point, I can't tell you that. We're not going to have any language I can tell you around anything that involves like salaries or promotion amounts, things like that. Now, whether we could have some language that allowed for the creation of new awards, that I don't know. But, you know, I'll check with Jana and see what conversations she may or may not have had with the provost along those lines. In terms of the stipend language, that's probably going to take some real time because we're probably going to have to talk to a lot of different people and try to spend some, I think that's something we have to think through very carefully and thoughtfully and work with different constituencies at the university before we can, I don't want to just throw some language on the table in 2 weeks without having a chance to really work through, to think about that and work through it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm certainly open to what you're saying. I understand the appearance of unfairness, and that can be very frustrating for people. I get that. But we want to make sure that we don't overcorrect in one way or undercorrect. That's something that just needs to be really carefully thought through.
Mm-hmm. So if I have some language for some sections, would you like me to send that to you?
Off the record
sort of thing? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And there was one more thing I wanted to talk about. This is just a quick side sort of thing. Why 2314 compensation currency? Was there ever a concern that it wasn't going to be paid in dollars or?
I'd like to ask you the same question because, not you personally, but we showed up at a bargaining session, a couple of years ago, and I remember it well. And John was there. I mean, the whole team was there because we were almost at the end of the negotiations. And Tom Wozniak, and they put this thing on the table and said it needs to be paid in U.S. dollars or whatever it says. And we were like, okay, did you think we were going to be paying out in Bitcoin or what? And they were like, you just never know. And so we said, well, I mean, we don't object to it. We don't understand why, but if that's what you want, we'll agree to it. So it's been in there. I still have no idea why we have it in there, but, you know, we honestly, if we can agree on something, then we don't object to it, and that's something you guys want. We said, okay. So I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay.
But you might ask
Giovanna, are you thinking that toilet paper is more valuable now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know that everything's more valuable now. Okay, the other one, and this is 23.7 administrative discretion increases. So let me see from the data. I'm looking at it and stuff. So this is, in the past, this has always been a source of contention, up to 1.5 the total salary of all employees. This was, in the past, was a contention because it was contested in part because it was thought that the ADI money, so it says 1.5% of the total salary rate of employees. But it was thought that the school was hoarding some of the money or having those reserves much larger than they needed to be. I don't know if that's ever been the case or if that was just one of those anecdotal rumors.
It's spending authorization. The colleges, if they have the money, are authorized to spend up to that amount of what they have, but it's not like for years, College of Nursing just didn't have the money, and they just didn't give out any ADIs because they just couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. I think there's a misconception about that. I think people think that it's just this pot of money that's sitting over there. Mm-hmm. And that, we could just redistribute that and give everybody, you know, that much money as a salary increase. But that's not actually what it is. So maybe we can, when we have our budget people come, they can get into more detail on that with you. I'll mention that to them that, you know, you want to understand that a little bit better about how that functions.
Yes, that would be nice, actually, because I think that's how it's understood. It's conceived or it's perceived as a pot of money that people can just use. And then I will say that our predecessor, President Whitaker, kind of made it seem like it was when he started handing out equity and merit raises. And so a lot of people got it. This is when they became aware of the ADI and they thought, oh, this is just a chunk of money that we can always have access to. And I'm just bringing that up.
Those are very different.
Hmm?
Those are very different types of raises. The ADIs come out of the colleges. What Dale Whitaker had funded was central. So that isn't up to the deans. So he can take, you know, the president and the provost can take things off the top of the university budget. And the folks that you'll see next time will do a much better job explaining that than I will. But it's a difference of the level of the institution where those things are initiated.
Okay, that's where the confusion was, because even I didn't know what that was. I think many people who were like underpaid got something that Whitaker gave us all. So it was just like, is that an ADI? And so,
no,
that makes sense.
You know, we had that big equity study that the Senate did, that Dale had sort of commissioned, that's the wrong word, but had worked with the Senate to do, and it found some glaring inequities in certain places, and Dale committed that as provost that he would take a certain amount of money off the top of the budget of what he had available to fund, to try to, I don't know that he made everybody completely whole, but to make people as whole as possible with the funds that he had available. Because of that study, that's totally different from ADI. So, yeah, that was something that, as provost, he said, "Okay, I'm going to tell the budget committee I need this money because we have these inequities. We have to address them. This is not discretionary in the sense that these people, you know, I like them and they were, you know, nice and they got." You know, they were meritorious in their service this year, so I'm just going to give them some money. It was a response to a university initiative that the university and the Senate jointly did and made a decision. It's time for us to address this.
Javon, something that occurs to me and might be worth sharing with other folks, if the colleges had their budgets increased for this 1.5%, you absolutely would be guaranteed that every dean would be in there with a tin cup asking for 1.5%. But the difference really with these ADIs is they have to find it themselves. That they can't go to the provost, they can't go to the president and ask for those funds. They've got to find it themselves. Okay. And that's why sometimes it's just not available. Some colleges may give them 1 year, and another college just simply isn't able to do so.
Okay, that needs more clarification. If we could do that ADI, just what you just said already clarifies everything, that it's at the college level. Because there was a lot of confusion, and it was, as I said, it was Dale that people did not connect, oh, this is part of the equity study, this is a different type of thing versus ADI. And I remember a lot of people telling me like, oh, I got an ADI. And I'm like, what ADI?
No.
Okay. And even I was calling it ADI because I was like, I don't know what it is, so I'll call it ADI. But it's part of the equity study. That makes a lot more sense. But even if that even what you just said, if that line could just be there, that it comes from the colleges, not at the university top level, that would be very helpful.
Okay.
Because again, it's one of those things where people, similar to the administrative salary stipends, it's another one where people feel like, I work just as hard as X, Y, and Z. Why am I not getting an ADI? And and this has been going on, and this is ongoing. And, you know, in academics, as you all know, they never forget stuff, even if it happened 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So when Dale gave those equity monies, people are still telling me, like, I still haven't received my ADI. But it was Dale who actually gave the money. So but some clarification would be wonderful.
And it was tied to that equity study. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I remember, because I think even the email I got from Charlie said tied to the equity study. But because it came from Charlie's office, I think people thought, ooh, ADI.
Yeah.
And actually, I think that was only like 2 years ago. Yeah.
Well, it can't have been too long because Dale was only here for, as we know, for a brief period of time. So
I know. I think as soon as he came on board.
His total tenure from as provost and president was, I don't think even 5 years, was it?
Oh, no. I think not even 9 months. I think he was provost.
Well, president. Yeah.
President,
he was
yeah.
provost for a couple of years, but yeah.
Oh, poor guy.
Talk about being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I know. Let me see. Oh, I did have one more, and this is so this one's important, and that is the and I think I mentioned to you before in like an email, so I'll just make it public now. So the state legislation, before they closed up, they said that 1.5% of our ENG money is now going to be sent to all of our retirement funds, something of the sort, or they're going to contribute, each university is expected to contribute 1.5% more into the retirement funds of faculty. And I wonder if that was being considered.
I don't know if it's just faculty. I think it's all university employees probably.
Oh,
but
right. Oh, you're right.
So what's the question exactly?
If the university was already calculating that into their future budget.
Well, I'm sure they are. I mean, we got hit with several unfunded mandates, so to speak. That one, I think there's, I want to say something about the health insurance that we now have to fund that we weren't having to fund before. I mean, the legislature shifted several big responsibilities onto us. I mean, and we're talking $2 and $3 million type things that, and basically said, you have to do it now, but we're not giving you any money to do it with. So good luck. So yes, that is being factored into our budget planning.
Okay. And is that something that they'll be able to comment on April 30th, do you think, or is that a long-term
project? I can certainly ask for them to.
Okay. All right. So those were most of my big questions. So let me see. Do my team members, do you guys have any other questions or ideas?
No, you said it all. Thank you.
All right. All right. So this point, since we don't have
I apologize for I live in a condo and that's our maintenance, our yard people, so I apologize for the noise.
Oh yeah, no problem.
I never know when they're going to be cutting the grass, so
no, it's not a problem. Okay, so those are the majority of the questions regarding like budget planning and Article 23 that I, and as I said before, I wanted to bring up some of those non-economic points because I didn't think you guys would have the salary ready. And then some of the points too that I made
up. I see your daughter.
Yeah, that's my daughter. That's Vivi.
Hey, Vivi. She's cute.
Oh, thank you. She says you're cute. So those were the most of my questions, and then also regarding some of the potential changes for or revisions or alterations for Article 23 that weren't immediate. And I was also wondering, too, that given the situation with COVID and the state legislation and everything, if you'd be open to continuing to bargain April 30th. I mean, April 30th will have the budget people here, but starting to perhaps after my meeting with Jana, starting to discuss some of the other like kind of non-economic issues such as the excellence awards and some language in other regions.
We're always willing to talk and we're always willing to look at language and you know, and then between after you talk with Jana, I'm sure she'll circle back around with me and we'll have a conversation about that. So
okay, all right, great. And we'll let you know about ratification very soon.
Okay. Yeah, because I just have to let the board know. I mean, I've sent them all the materials, so they know that this is something that is could be on the agenda, but they just don't know. But, you know, if we don't get a vote, then I'll just have to tell them to pull that item off the agenda. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to double back. Like Scott said, he's just checking on a few things. So Scott and Nina are in the elections committee, and they inform me. So.
I mean, this is hard for everybody. Everything we're doing is just, you know, 3 or 4 extra steps than it would normally be.
Yeah, everything takes extra long, yes, to do. Right.
Well, everybody looks good. The it's healthy. So I hope everybody's staying healthy and as sane as you can in the circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking through my notes, making sure I didn't forget anything else. I did have a question about impact bargaining. So you said about regarding, so Monday we'll continue with that. Did you want to talk about that today at all, or not quite ready for today? And we'll just do it on Monday.
It's up to you. I mean, we have some time, so if you want to talk about it further, I'm
so
sure.
Why we noticed it for Monday.
Okay.
Oh, that's right.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Noticed it. We posted it. We noticed it in terms of posting a notice. So I you're right. We probably shouldn't get into that because there people who would want to attend who, you know, aren't attending today because they didn't know we were going to be talking about it today.
That's right. The 3 days. Yeah, I always forget about that. The 3 days. Okay. All right. So we'll do that then. Let me see. All right. And then do you know when you'll have some language? Because I know Chuck said that he would send me some language before Monday's session.
I think Chuck's working on it.
I am working on it, yes.
Okay. So you'll have it to me maybe by tomorrow or Monday morning?
As soon as I can get it to you.
Okay.
I want it off my plate.
Okay, good. All right. All right, then. I think unless one of my team members has a question or a comment or anything, I think I went through most of my notes. Scott?
Well, this is Scott. Just want to say thank you to everyone and, you know, continue to keep healthy and look forward to seeing everyone next time.
All right. Sounds good.
Take care, everybody.
Take care, guys.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Vivi.